Support for WPR comes from The Alliance, a not-for-profit cooperative that contracts with over 39,000 healthcare providers on its employers' behalf to help them access healthcare. The-Alliance.org.
It's the morning show on the Ideas Network, and I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent. We're going to be talking to a Washington Post journalist about President Biden's administration's move so far when it comes to the environment and how they're unrolling the previous administration's environmental legacy. Keeping track of that at the Washington Post website, and we'll have the details for you after this morning's Wisconsin Life. A special story from our own Andrea Anderson this morning. Here's producer Maureen McCollum about parenthood during the pandemic.
Bringing a new life into this world is a blessing, and being able to share a newborn with family and friends is one of the biggest joys parents can have. But the coronavirus pandemic has taken these moments away from many families, leaving them with a slew of emotions to work through. WPR's Andrea Anderson shares these feelings in a letter to her newborn, Magnolia.
Dearest Magnolia, I write part of the story on my phone as we snuggle in the rocking chair and you drift to sleep. One of the dogs quietly peeks his head through the baby gate and then walks away. The cat purrs nearby, wishing she could be sitting on the chair's armrest. As I feel your warmth and hear your teeny soft snores, I think about the world you were born into in June. It's a world where millions have died from a new virus that has torn the global economy apart and turned life upside down. It's a world where your sister's is normal has been a memory and also a goal, as they yearn for hangouts with friends, birthday parties, and seeing your cousins. But the world isn't all bad at this time. People have come together like never before in some ways, working to help those in need. Sweet Magnolia, you were born into a house and family full of love in one of the darkest times this world has seen. And while many people, including me, struggle to see the light, you are that light our family needs. We made plans with your grandparents to come and visit right after you were born. But March came and our plans looked like a distant dream in the midst of a pandemic. We'd say optimistically at the end of Zoom calls and FaceTimes, maybe June will be different. But June came and the world was no better. Except for you. You were born into so much love, but only four people could share you. Your two sisters, your father, and me. Your grandparents waited at their faraway homes for text messages with pictures and videos. They waited for video calls. After a two-week quarantine, just a couple weeks after you were born, they finally got to hold you because we posed no risk. Imagine, a newborn, only a few weeks old, could pose a lethal risk to her own grandparents. It was unimaginable, yet our reality. Your little, beautiful self filled their hearts with joy. It was as if I could see their bodies recharging every second they held you. They didn't want to let you go because they didn't know when they'd get to see you again. It made me cry. The visits came to an end and we hoped we'd see them soon, but the pandemic continued. The milestones you reach, sweet Magnolia, have been celebrated. But for each one you make, a part of me breaks inside because your village can't see her first in person. You bring so much laughter and joy. Your giggles are the best when your sisters make funny faces and rub their nose to yours, or when they tickle your belly. Your chattering in the morning is the best alarm clock. Your wobbly wave is the cutest. The four of us get to experience your deep sighs and your snuggles, your infectious smile. We get to see you roll over, then crawl, then stand. We hear you say, hey, and dada. See, Magnolia, this pandemic has robbed so many people of so many things. It's not fair. No one ever asked for this to be how it is, but no matter what, we have you and all the future memories to share with your village. This will all come to an end someday, but for now, sweet Magnolia, you remain our hope and our light.
WPR's Andrea Anderson shares a letter that she wrote to her newborn, Magnolia. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowland Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Thank you to Andrea and to Maureen. Now, confronting climate change and committing to environmental justice. That has been the pledge of Joe Biden's administration, and the Washington Post has been keeping track. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent, and our next guest is a part of the Washington Post team following the Biden administration's environmental policies and what they're doing to the legacy of President Trump. You have the opportunity this morning to share your priorities for the environment and make them heard statewide at 1-800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Juliet Alperin is a senior national affairs correspondent for The Washington Post. Juliet, good morning.
Good morning, Lee.
So give us some scope of your project that your team's working on at The Washington Post and why you and your colleagues saw a need to track these policies in this way.
Well, as you can imagine, for example, over the entire course of Donald Trump's term, my colleague, particularly Brady Dennis, and I had been, you know, tracking all of these environmental and energy policy rollbacks that the administration had been pursuing as it sought to deregulate what the federal government does and you know, on policies that affect people's lives across the country. And we wanted to take stock of it some way. And we partnered with John Myskins, a really talented graphic reporter, because we wanted to tell the story in an interactive and visual way. And so what we did is we started compiling every single policy we could identify that the Trump administration had pursued that affected existing environmental protections. And so we started this before the election and then wanted to pursue it either way, regardless of whether President Trump won re-election or lost. And now it's become a really helpful tool in tracking both what President Biden has been doing to reverse his predecessor's policies on climate change and other issues, but also track what he's doing, because he's obviously moving ahead on different policies that are new that we think Americans would want to know about.
So, Juliet, what are the numbers so far this morning on the Washington Post tracker?
Well, we need to publish another update. But right now, what we have is that out of roughly 200 policies that the Trump administration pursued, 22 have been overturned. Another 70 are targeted by President Biden, and 19 new environmental protections have been added. It's worth noting, in fact, I was reporting with a couple of my colleagues just in the past couple of days, that there have been a couple changes, including at least one more policy has been overturned by the Environmental Protection Agency. So we're at nearly two dozen policies overturned.
So nearly two dozen previous administration policies overturned, 70 still targeted for the future, and 19 new policies for the environment put in place already by the Biden administration. Juliet Alperin, how much of this can be done with the stroke of a presidential pen? How are these how are the rollbacks of the previous administration being restored by the current administration?
That's a great question. So the vast majority of these policies were adopted by the executive branch, which allows them to be reversed by the executive branch. That's not every single one, but the vast majority of them. So what that means is that they can be reversed by President Biden, but some can be done by a stroke of a pen. We saw that when on his first day of office, he, for example, rejected an international permit for the Keystone XL pipeline, which would transmit heavy crude from Canada down to the Gulf Coast. He also rejoined the Paris Climate Agreement. Those are the easy things to do. Then there are others that take a little more time and involve, for example, rescinding an existing rule, proposing a new one. So some can take longer, but then there are a very small number where you actually would need congressional action, which are quite difficult, especially if they were struck down by the previous Congress, which is what happened in the early days of the Trump administration.
Juliet Alperin is our guest, senior national affairs correspondent with the Washington Post, with a graphic, interactive, and visual tally of the Biden administration's environmental policies and how they compare to the previous administration. And Juliet, as you'd mentioned, the President Biden is implementing additional policies, 19 by your tally to date. What are some of those examples?
So some of the new policies that he's undertaking are things, you know, certainly that have to do with climate change. That's certainly one of his, you know, big, you know, a focus of his. So they include everything from, for example, signing an executive order that calls for an analysis of the national security implications of climate change and what it means for, you know, refugee migration. It's also things like a pause on all new leasing on federal lands and waters, and issues like he's trying to expand offshore wind power. So we saw the Interior Department sign off on a critical environmental approval for a massive wind farm off Massachusetts Martha's Vineyard. So it's a mix of things, but certainly in terms of some of the initial affirmative policies that the Biden administration is doing, a number of them have to do with either climate or this issue, as you mentioned, of environmental justice. How do you address the disproportionate pollution burden that disadvantaged communities and communities of color face in the United States?
So, Juliet, is it fair then that what we're seeing to some degree is what we're watching for right now are new policies, the overturning of previous policies and targeted policies that are moving to the future. But when we look towards, and you mentioned greenhouse gases and climate change, what about pollution? As your colleagues track 64 Trump administration policies that aim to weaken or overturn regulations on air pollution, how's the Biden administration attempting to now curb that pollution?
Well, a great example just happened, in fact, yesterday, which is the Environmental Protection Agency withdrew a critical air pollution permit for an oil refinery in the Virgin Islands on St. Croix. This is something that I wrote about with a couple of my colleagues. And what's interesting about this is an oil refinery which, to a great extent, is really supported by politicians on the Virgin Islands. It used to be a huge source of revenue. It had tremendous environmental violations and ran into trouble and shut down nearly a decade ago. The Trump administration took a fairly novel interpretation of the Clean Air Act and paved the way for it to reopen. It restarted on February 1st. And then within 3 days, there was an accident that actually showered fine mist of oil over hundreds of homes in a neighboring impoverished community. And so the EPA is taking a look at this and specifically cited issues like, you know, traditional air pollution and environmental justice in reassessing that decision. So we are seeing it, but many of those policies, again, would take an extended rulemaking process to change. This was kind of unusual in that it could be done more quickly than others.
3 days after reopening and it has its first environmental disaster or accident?
Yeah, it was pretty shocking. It was unexpected. It was it triggered a safety valve. It actually protected people at the plant itself. So it could have been, in fact, even a deadly accident if things had gone wrong. But it did again. It had this impact that really kind of brought back all the memories of what was problematic about this plant. But at the same point, you know, again, obviously we are still using fossil fuels. Oil refineries are important. And so this is the political tightrope that the administration walks when it tries to navigate these questions.
Juliet Alperin is on the team working to track the Biden administration's environmental policies, including their effort to address some of the 170 Trump-era environmental rollbacks. Do we lose too much ground on climate change under President Trump? Do we risk losing too much ground in the economy under President Biden? 1-800-642-1234. How do you see that nexus of the environment and the economy today? We'll take your questions and continue with our guest from The Washington Post in 2 minutes. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Ideas Network. drilling, mining, logging, it all matters to Wisconsin. And the decisions made in Washington, D.C. are bound to affect our air, water, and soil, energy, and the economy. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rabin, and our guest is a senior national affairs correspondent at the Washington Post, where you will find their running interactive tally of President Biden's environmental policies and how they're undoing President Trump's work. So how do you feel about the back and forth over our environmental protections? And how do you view the economics of the environment and the actions that our presidents unilaterally can take? Phone number is 1-800-642-1234. Email available to you at ideas@wpr.org. Juliet Eilprin is on the team working to track the Biden administration's environmental policies, including their effort to address some of the 170 Trump-era environmental rollbacks. And Juliet, I can't help but think how many of those Trump-era environmental rollbacks were in response to the Obama administration's environmental protections. How much of this is the ping-pong and back and forth of environmental policy dependent on who's in office?
You raise a great point. Certainly a significant number of the rollbacks that we're talking about were actually policies enacted under Barack Obama. I mean, and this is one of the conundrums that we face when it comes to national energy and environmental policy, which is that, frankly, there's been Congress has been so paralyzed when it comes to making these decisions that it's effectively ceded all of the action to whoever's in the Oval Office. And so you do have this big back and forth where, depending on who voters decide to elect as president, you see a radical shift, a kind of a pendulum shift in terms of policy. And one of the interesting things that we're certainly watching, you know, this year and in the coming few years is whether there's enough of a consensus that can build on some of these issues that the warring sides can come together and reach some sort of more enduring compromise that stays in place regardless of, for example, who's in office come 4 years from now.
And I have to wonder about the net effect, not just on the environment, but also on the economy when policies like these that have drastic effects across the land and water and soil and air can go back and forth every 8, 12, even 4 years. What's the net effect?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you see a few different things. First of all, it makes it very difficult for companies to make decisions, you know, and to advance projects because it's hard to know, you know, what kind of approval they're going to get. A great example is, for example, in Minnesota, where we've recently seen action. You know, some of your listeners might have visited Minnesota's Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness or be aware of it. You know, here's this wilderness area that in the waning days of the Obama administration, the federal government denied the renewal of a couple of mining leases nearby, noting that it could affect the environment. Then within a matter of months after President Trump took office, the Interior Department issued a legal opinion reversing course and saying that, you know, these leases could be renewed. So basically the company started gearing up to start mining. There's been lawsuits over it. And sure enough, this month, a federal judge granted the Biden administration's request to pause the litigation as it, you know, essentially reassesses the legality of this. So, you know, I mean, there's some cases, as you mentioned, where, you know, you do have when there's uncertainty and business moves forward and you do have air pollution emitted or water pollution. There are other times where simply, you know, different projects get stuck in limbo because it's unclear whether it can go forward.
So the politics of this are obvious when it comes to environmental policy and whoever's in the White House. Juliet Eilprin is the senior national affairs correspondent for The Washington Post, and she's been covering the Biden administration's environmental policy moves. And, so we see on the face of it the politics involved in environmental policy. But behind that, how has science been involved in our environmental policy from administration to administration, Juliet?
Well, again, we've certainly seen a difference of opinion at times. Scientists often raise uncomfortable truths and findings about the implications of policies. There's no question that, for example, under the Trump administration, there are multiple times when political appointees ignored scientific recommendations as they adopted policies. Although it's worth saying that there are certainly times that did happen under the Obama administration, We're waiting to see what happens under Biden. He has, you know, signed an executive order that prioritizes the role of science in decision making, and we'll see how, you know, how that ends up informing policies going forward.
So we're going to keep an eye on your graphic and interactive visual counter tracker of the Biden administration's environmental policies. But what is your team at the Washington Post keeping an eye on, Juliet Eilprin?
Well, I think we're really looking at a number of things, including the fact that the president has pledged to mobilize the entire government to address climate change and environmental challenges. So, for example, what is the Agriculture Department going to do about it in the months and few years ahead? That's going to have huge implications for whether it's Wisconsin or other, you know, other states. What's happening at the Transportation Department? So I think we're, you know, or even in the Treasury Department. So we'll be looking for kind of some of the unexpected policies that will affect people's lives and the planet.
But the politics will certainly play a role in this. To what degree would Congress have to play a role in any sort of consistency in environmental policy? How much of this will be dependent on some sort of bipartisanship?
For really enduring policies, you often need a bipartisan consensus. And so, for example, as the president gets up to start pushing for his infrastructure bill, it's going to be critical to see what are the proposals that ultimately would help speed the transition to, say, a clean energy future that Republicans as well as Democrats can support. And you're right. In many cases, you can have short-term victories, but if you really want those long-term meaningful policies, it really will depend on what Congress is willing to approve.
Juliet Eilprin, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
I enjoyed it.
Juliet Eilprin is a senior national affairs correspondent for The Washington Post. Keep an eye on their running tracker at thewashingtonpost.com's website. And join us next Friday for the start of a four-week movie club on The Morning Show. Have you seen Mank yet? The Trial of the Chicago 7? Well, every Friday in April leading up to the Academy Awards, we'll be discussing two of the Best Picture nominees. And first up, a couple of period pieces, Mank and The Trial of the Chicago 7. Check them out over the next week and let's talk about them next Friday. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.